Picture three countries, separated by geography, linked by alliance, and facing the same question: what does air superiority look like in 2035 and beyond? The United Kingdom, Italy, and Japan have been working on that answer together for several years now. This week, that program just got a lot more real. I'm Tower on ATIS. This is Radio Hangar. Today's aviation news is brought to you by AviationSoul.com. Aviation challenge coins built to mark the milestones, discipline, and pride behind every step in flight. From first solo to airline transport pilot, every coin tells a story. AviationSoul.com. Let's talk about the Global Combat Air Program. If you haven't been following it closely, that's understandable. It's a defense program. It doesn't directly affect what you're flying this weekend, but it is one of the most ambitious aviation development programs on the planet right now. And the news out of AeroTime this week gives us a reason to dig in. A company called Edgewing has secured a contract worth £4.6 billion at current exchange rates. That's roughly $6.1 billion. The contract is to advance development of what the program's partners are calling the next generation of combat aircraft. This is not a study contract. This is not a feasibility review. This is development money, and a contract of this size signals that GCAP is moving from concept into something that is actually going to get built. For those who aren't tracking the defense aviation world closely, let's establish some context. The Global Combat Air Program was formally announced in December of 2022. The three partner nations, the United Kingdom, Italy, and Japan, came together around a shared problem. Their current frontline fighters, the Eurofighter Typhoon for the UK and Italy, and the Mitsubishi F2 for Japan, are going to need replacements. The Typhoon has been exceptional. It has been the backbone of Royal Air Force and Italian Air Force operations for years. But the fighter it was designed to counter, and the threats it was designed to address, those threats have evolved significantly. The F2, Japan's primary air superiority fighter, faces similar obsolescence pressures. Japan has been looking hard at how to maintain air superiority in a region where the threat picture has changed dramatically over the past decade. So three nations with similar timelines, similar requirements, and a clear strategic rationale for working together decided to pool resources rather than each develop a platform independently. That decision has enormous implications, both militarily and for the aviation industry as a whole. The aircraft that GCAP is meant to produce is commonly referred to as a sixth-generation fighter. That term gets used loosely in aviation circles. So let's talk about what it actually means. Fifth-generation fighters, your F-22 Raptor, your F-35 Lightning II, were defined largely by stealth as a primary design characteristic combined with sensor fusion that allows the pilot to have an integrated picture of the battle space rather than managing individual systems independently. The F-35 in particular changed the conversation about what a modern fighter jet does. It's less about being the fastest or most maneuverable aircraft in the sky, and more about the aircraft's ability to gather, process, and share information across a networked force. Sixth generation pushes that philosophy further. The platforms being designed under this framework are intended to operate as nodes in a larger networked battle space. They will be capable of controlling unmanned wingmen, what the defense community calls loyal wingmen or collaborative combat aircraft. They'll likely incorporate directed energy systems. The avionics will be designed from the ground up to interface with everything from satellites to ground-based assets in near real time. And stealth, rather than being a design consideration layered on top of an existing airframe, will be baked in at a more fundamental level of the geometry. Here's what that means for the pilot in the cockpit. A sixth-generation aircraft isn't just a faster, stealthier fighter, it's the manned centerpiece of an integrated system. The human in that jet is managing not just their own aircraft, but potentially a flight of unmanned wingmen simultaneously. The cockpit becomes a command node as much as a flying position. That is a fundamentally different kind of aviation, and it requires the aircraft, the training pipeline, and the doctrine around it to all evolve in parallel. The GCAP aircraft is expected to enter service around 2035. That gives you a sense of the timeline. This is a long program. Aviation development at this scale always is. The F-35 program, for comparison, went from contract award to initial operational capability over a span of roughly 20 years. GCAP's partners are working to compress that timeline, which is part of why securing development contracts of this magnitude matters. The money has to flow to keep the schedule on track, and delays in funding at critical phases tend to cost more in the long run than what you save by pushing them. Now, who is Edgewing? This is worth unpacking, because the name may not be familiar to casual aviation followers. The GCAP program is structured around three major industrial partners. In the United Kingdom, that's BAE Systems. In Italy, it's Leonardo. In Japan, it's Mitsubishi Heavy Industries. These are the prime contractors. The companies with the decades of experience building fighter aircraft and the production infrastructure to support a program of this scale. Edgewing appears to be a contractual entity or vehicle within this industrial structure, set up to manage a significant piece of the development work. Programs of this complexity often create purpose-built organizational structures to handle international contract management, intellectual property arrangements, and the coordination of technical work across multiple countries. The size of this contract tells you something important regardless of the exact structure. £4.6 billion is not money that goes toward concept art and wind tunnel tests. At this stage, funding of this magnitude is going toward actual engineering, prototype development, systems integration. The early manufacturing investments that have to happen before a new aircraft can fly, that's the milestone that matters here. GCAP has had its skeptics. Anytime you put three nations together on a defense program, you have the potential for the kind of political and industrial friction that can slow things down, or in worst-case scenarios, kill a program entirely. Europe's history of collaborative defense programs includes some real cautionary tales. The Panavia Tornado was a success. The Eurofighter Typhoon ultimately came together, but both programs took longer and cost more than originally projected. GCAP's partners have been deliberate about structuring the program to avoid some of those historical pitfalls. The involvement of Japan is itself significant. Japan's post-war constitution has historically constrained its defense posture and its ability to participate in defense export arrangements. The decision to partner with the United Kingdom and Italy on GCAP required Japan to navigate some of those domestic political and legal frameworks carefully. The fact that they did, and that the program has continued to advance, reflects Japan's assessment of its own security environment and the value it places on deeper integration with Western defense partners. From a purely aviation standpoint, the partnership brings something interesting. Japan's defense aerospace sector has capabilities that are not widely known outside the industry. Mitsubishi Heavy Industries has been doing advanced fighter work for decades. Their domestically developed aircraft, including the F-2 and its predecessor programs, incorporated technologies developed in Japan that brought genuine value to the GCAP table. This isn't a situation where the UK and Italy are bringing Japan along for political reasons. Each partner is contributing real technology and real expertise. The program benefits from that diversity. Let me talk about what a contract of this scale actually signals for the program's momentum. When you commit $6+ billion, you're committing to a delivery timeline. Program offices have milestones tied to that funding, and missing those milestones has consequences. For GCAP, this signals that the program has cleared the hurdles that most commonly delay major defense aviation projects in their early phases. The budget battles, the requirements disputes, the industrial workshare negotiations. It is now in execution mode. There is also the talent question. Programs funded at this scale attract the best engineers, the best test pilots, the best avionics specialists, and software developers with the clearances needed to do the work. The aviation talent pipeline follows the programs where the most ambitious work is happening. Right now, a significant piece of that work is happening inside the GCAP industrial structure. For those of us on the civil and general aviation side of the industry, programs like GCAP have historically had a significant technology transfer effect. The global positioning system came from military investment. The composite structures you see on modern business jets, and increasingly on general aviation airframes, have direct roots in defense research and development. The avionics integration philosophy showing up in glass cockpit systems for light aircraft traces part of its lineage back to what was being developed for fifth-generation fighters. Whatever GCAP ultimately produces, the technologies developed along the way will find their way into the broader aviation ecosystem over time. They always do. There's an industrial policy dimension to this story that's worth mentioning as well. The United Kingdom has been working to define what its defense industrial base looks like post-Brexit, and GCAP has been a central piece of that strategy. BAE Systems is a major employer and a major exporter. The GCAP program represents a commitment to maintaining UK capability in advanced fighter manufacturing. Without a program of this kind, that capability atrophies. It's the same story Italy faces. Leonardo has been competing globally for defense contracts, and GCAP gives the company a platform to demonstrate advanced systems integration capability at the highest level. For both nations, GCAP is as much an industrial policy instrument as it is a military program. Japan's situation is somewhat different. the decision to pursue GCAP in partnership rather than develop an entirely domestic program reflected a calculation that the cost, the complexity, and the timeline pressure made collaboration the better choice. But Japan enters this partnership as a technology contributor, not simply a funding partner. What Mitsubishi Heavy Industries learns from the GCAP program will be integrated into Japan's own defense aviation capabilities going forward. The knowledge transfer flows in multiple directions. Now, here's the broader competitive picture, because GCAP doesn't exist in isolation. It is one of three major sixth-generation programs currently in active development globally. The United States has its Next Generation Air Dominance program, which has become more visible in the defense trade press as details about the industrial competitors began to surface. France and Germany have their Future Combat Air System, known as FCAS, which has had a more turbulent development process due to workshare disputes between Dassault and Airbus. GCAP is generally regarded as the most advanced of the three in terms of program definition, industrial structure, and contractual clarity. The competition between these programs matters beyond the obvious military implications. Each one represents a different approach to the same fundamental challenge. What the United States builds will reflect American strategic priorities and American manufacturing approaches. What GCAP produces will reflect the combined vision and capability of three nations with distinct aviation traditions. Watching how these programs evolve and what capabilities they prioritize tells you a great deal about how the world's major air forces believe air combat will be conducted in the middle of this century. For aviation history buffs, the longer arc here is worth appreciating. The United Kingdom has been building world-class fighter aircraft since the Spitfire and the Hurricane, and the de Havilland Mosquito changed the trajectory of the Second World War. Italy's aviation heritage goes back even further, to some of the most innovative designs of the 1930s, aircraft that influenced designers around the world. Japan produced the Mitsubishi A6M0, one of the most capable naval fighters of the early war years, and has continued developing indigenous aviation capability across 8 decades since. GCAP puts those three traditions in a room together and says, "Now build the future." Whatever comes out of that program, it will carry a lineage worth following. Here is the honest summary of where we are. This contract is a significant milestone. It represents real money being committed to real development work. The program has cleared major organizational and political hurdles to reach this point. A contract of this size signals execution rather than negotiation, and that distinction matters. At the same time, programs of this scale and complexity always carry risk. History provides plenty of examples of major fighter programs that encountered cost overruns, schedule delays, requirements creep, and political disruptions that stretch timelines by years. GCAP's international structure introduces coordination challenges that single-nation programs simply don't face. The program's target of 2035 for initial operational capability is ambitious. Whether it holds will depend on how well the industrial partners execute, how stable the political environment remains across three countries over a long development timeline, and whether the threat environment continues to justify the investment. Those are real uncertainties, and they are worth keeping in mind alongside the positive headline, but for now, the news from AeroTime is a positive signal. The contract is signed, the development funding is committed, and the work is moving forward. If you want to follow GCAP closely, the Defense Trade Press will give you the most detailed current reporting. Aviation Week and Space Technology, Jane's Defense, and The War Zone all cover the program with depth. AeroTime, which broke this story, covers the European defense aviation sector particularly well. Thanks to AeroTime for the reporting. I'm Tower, RadioHanger.com has more. We'll transmit again soon.